everybody, and welcome to episode number 38 of Girl Fight. My name is Nicole Tanner, and I am your host. Today, I am joined by Megan Sullivan, Dana Jungle Ward.
Hi, everyone.
And a very special guest, Megan Geiser from Her Interactive.
Hi, everyone. Very happy to be here.
Yeah. So we're going to jump in with Megan, you know, about all kinds of cool stuff and girl power and all that good stuff. but first, let's get going with what we're playing. Megan, do you want to?
Sure. I am still going through DLC stuff for Mass Effect 2, which I'm really enjoying. Playing Shadow Broker a little bit, which I'm really having a blast with. Started E7 on PlayStation Portable last night. Only got through like the first sort of main boss, but it's pretty good so far. And I can't remember if I talked about this last week or not, but I downloaded Stacking and I downloaded Plants vs. Zombies, both of which are very charming and a lot of fun. So
what's Stacking about?
I mean, I've seen it. Russian dolls. It's hilarious.
It's really funny. It's you're this little Russian doll during the like Industrial Revolution in Europe, and your family's been sold into child labor, and it's up to you to go and rescue them. And what you can do is, in order to manipulate your environment or solve puzzles, you jump into other dolls, which all have their own special abilities, and that's how you sort of get adults to talk to you or unlock doors. And it's a really cool concept, actually.
Yeah, that's what I've been playing the most as well. And there are things called hijinks in the levels. It's necessary things to do. And some of them are just so funny. Like, there's like a guy in a top hat who does like a white glove slap. And
yeah, is it action-y?
It's like action puzzle-y type things. I mean, you don't need super reflex skills to,
and you can solve levels in different ways, which adds to the replayability. Like, you can do different things and then go back and do it again, and just to see how you can create
each of the puzzles has like between 3 and 5 different solutions to it.
It's really cool.
Yeah, that's what I've been playing too. So, there's mine.
The production values are high, so it's a little steep in price. I was a little surprised it was $14.99.
Yeah.
But then again, I got a game code, so I was all right. But I was still I would definitely have people play it. But, you know, if you can wait for it to be like PlayStation Plus $9.99, then it would definitely be perfect.
And it is on Xbox Live as well.
Yeah,
it's funny how.
And what else is it on? Xbox?
Xbox Live and PlayStation Network.
Okay. Yeah.
It's funny how our expectations of price have been manipulated, because, it is, you're like, oh, $15.99 for $15 bucks.
As opposed to $59.99.
Yeah, exactly. I have not been playing anything. I've been really, really lame. I actually did a piece. I wrote a piece last week on IGN about noir novels, just to get you in the mood for LA Noir, because I
love
noir.
Which is a really cool article,
genre. Thank you. But then I don't retain the plot of a novel past 6 months of reading it. And so I will remember that I loved this, or this is one of my favorite books, but I have to read it like multiple times before I start remembering it. And I started rereading one of them again. So The Big Nowhere, which is one of my 10 favorite books ever. But that's what I've been doing. And I've actually been toting around Dragon Quest VI in my purse, with the thought of maybe giving that a go. I don't know how I feel about taking it
Have
on.
Have you played Dragon Quest before?
No, the closest I got was the Rocket Slime game on DS a few years back. I know it's a hardcore like JRPG, but I figure with the DS, then the cutscenes will be shorter.
Right.
Which is the thing that I always hate the most about
JRPGs. Do you enjoy level grinding and lots of it?
I play WoW.
That is true. You might be okay then.
Yeah. Okay. I figure I'll give it a try. I mean, it showed up at the office, it's a DS game, so I can play it on the bus.
With a very cute T-shirt, by the way. It says, let me be your Valentine.
Okay.
Yeah, So, I mean, really, honestly, other than that, Facebook games are the only things that I have been touching. And, that's just at work when I'm procrastinating writing an article. I want to get a couple rounds of Zuma Blitz in. Hopefully I can squeeze some in. I have family in town now and will for the next week and a half.
Oh, wow. Are they at your house, or are they just nearby?
At my house. Well, my brother is in town right now, which is fine. He's here for a conference, but he came in last week, is here through next week, leaves next Tuesday, and then my parents come in on Wednesday. So, and they're here through that Sunday.
So no games for you?
Not many. My brother maybe, because he enjoys games.
Yeah, but her parents hate them.
My parents are not fans, so no, we will not. And the last game I tried to show my parents was Flower. Because I thought, okay, And they saw the seizure warning at the front, the title screen of my dad. And then I got my dad off on a diatribe tangent. And it was gone. He was like, this just seems like a waste of time while he's playing solitaire on his palm. Right.
Yep, which dad. Technically is a game.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. I love you, my parents, but yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, Megan, do you want to
share
some stuff?
So, for me, I've been playing a little Frontierville, and on the iPad, I've been playing a lot of story-based games. Wandla, have you heard of that?
Mm-mm.
No.
And Cause of Death. Vera Blanc, and it's really interesting how, with this new medium, we're approaching how to tell a story in a different way.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a lot of variation there. And Angry Birds, a little of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's everybody funny, on the plane, coming down here, it's like everybody's playing it.
Yeah, this crazy stats that you were telling me.
Yeah,
Dana,
they.
About that game.
I just read. I had never heard the dev cost, but the dev cost, at least for the initial game, was $150,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I found, and I don't know how accurate it was, but that they have had 70 million paid downloads of the game in some form.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a good percentage.
That is a lovely profit.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Crazy.
Somebody's wife is very happy, or somebody's husband.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. So that's what we're been playing. So we're going to focus the rest of the episode on our special guest here. So, Megan, do you want to start just by giving kind of your personal background and how you landed at Her Interactive and fell into being CEO? and then also just tell us a little bit about Her Interactive and kind of what the goal is.
Sure. Well, my background is filmmaking. Mm-hmm. So I was a producer and editor for documentary and educational films and videos for 11 years. Mm-hmm. I grew up in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And around 92, I started getting really interested in multimedia.
Mm-hmm.
And Seattle was the hub at the time. And I was editing a PBS documentary on campus culture wars, or it mm-hmm. had to do with conflicts. And at the time, you know, everything was political correctness, and mm-hmm. there were five incidents on university campuses that ended up on Oprah, and gays versus heterosexuals
right.
at Princeton, and you know, Joe Schmo versus women's studies in Seattle, and so I was with that particular one. I came in as an editor, so I wasn't involved in producing it, and they had created reenactments, which I'm not really crazy about in a documentary. But anyway, what I noticed immediately is they had the women spray paint their hair purple, and which, you know, obviously, you know, everyone has an agenda, you know, with the film, but, you know, that was just so obvious. And I thought, what can I do to kind of, you know, make it even, you know, uh-huh. This issue between both of them. And so all I could really do is go to wide shots.
Right.
You know, I remember thinking at the time, because I was hearing about multimedia, wouldn't it be so interesting and what an opportunity to expand people's perspectives about the broad, you know, array of women that are out there. You know, mm-hmm. there are as many perspectives as there are women. And if you could press a button and you could, you know, see this perspective or understand this perspective, it would really help to break down the stereotypes that keep holding, you know, us back mm-hmm. in many areas. And so, about 2 years later, I just kept thinking about, you know, what a great opportunity this is. And Seattle was the hub at the mm-hmm. time, little startups. So I moved to Seattle without a job in 94. And then when I got there, I thought, what the hell have I done? and even my friends, when I left, they had from high school and stuff, they had a party for me, and they were all like, you know, really, you know, good luck, but you know, why are you doing
crazy.
This?
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, you're making, you know, you have a career. What the hell are you throwing it away? I'm like, wow, you know. So then I get there, and of course, nothing is ever as easy. But at the time, Microsoft was hiring because they wanted to be content producers at the time. So they were mm-hmm. looking with people with exactly my skills. And, you know, luckily they changed their mind because they really weren't, you know, that wasn't their core expertise anyway. But anyway, I got an offer there, and I, you know, thought that they probably wouldn't go under, and I was right. And you know, a lot of startups
and rent money is good.
Yeah, that's right. I was doing that, and you know, a lot of people did go under at the time, mm-hmm, yeah. Which they are right now as well. Mm-hmm. And so I was supposed to create this great, exciting project on colleges, universities, where, you know, we could film the personality, go interview different students and try to do that. And I just thought that was so exciting. But then a couple of months after I was hired, they canned the project because the marketing research wasn't sufficient or something. So I got on, they put me on CarPoint, which was the first online car buying guide, and which was pretty exciting. I'm not really into cars, but it was kind of neat. And I got reduced to black and white stills, like from film to black and white stills.
Oh, jeez.
But at any rate, I learned a lot, and but I knew I wanted to get with a creative team and mm-hmm. start creating meaningful content. And so a friend of mine said, "Hey, I heard about this company, Her Interactive, and the CEO they just got the license for Nancy Drew, and they're mm-hmm. going to do a game, and they need a creative director." And I'm like, "Oh my God!" I just got so excited. Mm-hmm. I really hadn't known much about the gaming industry, mm-hmm. But I did love Nancy Drew and just the inspiring kind of icon she is. And I thought, wow, that would be such an incredible opportunity. And so we met for a couple months, and and I just thought, I'm going to jump off that cliff again, yeah. because this is such a great opportunity. So we created the first game, and it took a year and a half to create. And we were pretty psyched about it, and we took it to the retailers to get it on the shelves, and this was 99. And they said, "Thanks so much. This is actually a really quality product, but, girls are computer phobic, so we're not going to take it."
Wow. Nice.
And, so we're sitting flabbergasted, but it was a reality at the time. Mm-hmm. And, obviously, if they'd done their homework, they would realize how silly that was, because we're, 51% of the population.
Right.
They target films, books, and music to girls.
And also Nancy Drew. Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anyone that I, any girl that I know growing up who didn't read Nancy
right.
Drew books.
Yeah.
At least one.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
if I didn't like her, you would usually read the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, but they were mm-hmm. convinced that there was no market for girls, and girls and women would never play computer games. That was their stance.
Yeah. Which is not shocking, given yeah. that's a fairly common held assumption throughout various aspects of various yeah. entertainment media.
And, the other thing is, some of the first programmers were in fact female, uh-huh. If they had really done their homework. But at any rate, so since they wouldn't let us in the front door, we went around back and mm-hmm. we started selling our games on Amazon.
Nice.
And we learned how to be publishers. We learned how to do packaging and PR and marketing, and the game sales started taking off, and the New York Times dubbed us the Un-Barbie of computer games.
Congratulations.
That's awesome.
Have you ever used that in like a slug across the top of the game, the Un-Barbie of computer games?
Anywhere we can. So wouldn't you know it, those same publishers came back to do a deal with us in retail. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got in. So then when we were in retail, we realized, the publishers is making the lion's share of the profit. So why don't we do what we did in e-tail and teach mm-hmm. ourselves how to do it? Mm-hmm. And so in the next year, we found someone to teach us and brought in a consultant. And then a year later was our first profitable year in 2002. And since then, we've sold about 8.5 million games.
Wow.
We're the number one PC adventure franchise in units, outselling Harry Potter, Myst, and Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. for six consecutive years.
Wow.
That's great.
And we've won, I think it's 23 consecutive Parents' Choice Gold Medal Awards, mm-hmm. which has always been, quality has always been our, mm-hmm. Part of our mission. Mm-hmm. And so we're really proud of that.
Yeah. Cool. So do you want to tell a little bit about how you got into the CEO position? So I know there's a little fun story behind that.
So when I came on board as creative director, I did not know that the CEO had been brought in to restructure the company because it was American Laser Games prior to that. Mm-hmm. And you're probably familiar with the arcade games Mad Dog McCree or Who Killed Johnny Rock. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Did those
yeah.
ring a bell? Anyway, that
American Laser
went...
Games, wow.
I
that
know.
Such
so...
a company name of the mid-90s.
Yeah. Such a company name of the mid-90s. And also, our legacy is a shoot-em-up yeah. kind of arcade. I mean, you know. So, anyway... So the restructuring, it was in Albuquerque, and he was brought in to restructure and bring it into Seattle, which I didn't know at mm-hmm. the time. And then shortly thereafter, I think it was probably a year, I was made executive producer. And then when we went to release it, and you know the story, nobody anticipated that. I think maybe quality or something, but sexist reasons why, mm-hmm. you know, girls yeah. couldn't play that. That was really... not anticipated. But at any rate, it was kind of his time, the CEO, to move on, and which I didn't know either. And so at a board meeting, he stands up and resigns, and they look at me and say, "We think you can do it."
Oh, wow.
and I literally turned white.
Yeah.
I did. And, you know, it's just so much information at once. And I was mm-hmm. like, what, you know, what does this mean? You know, is the company going to go on? Is this their plan? I guess right. this is their plan. You know,
and, what kind of a plan is this?
Exactly. And so, and anyway, they took me in another room and gave me a glass of water. And
it's like bourbon might have been more in order.
Actually, yeah, I would have drunk the whole thing. But anyway, it was about 20 minutes later, and I, you know, I just thought we have something so great here, and I naively said yes. And then about 3 months later, I realized how little I knew about all these areas. Mm-hmm. You know, I had, and so I started to kind of get anxious that, you know, maybe this wasn't the right decision. And so I, at one point, I went to my boyfriend, who's now my husband, and I said, you know what, I think I've made a mistake. I think, you know, they need someone in here who's been there, done that, maybe a CEO, someone who's been a CEO, uh-huh. been in business school. And he goes, you know, I don't really support that decision. And I was like, excuse me? You know, this is, you know, you're my partner, and right. I'm kind of freaking out here. And, you know, he said that basically anyone would love the opportunity to be able to create a culture with a team and to lead mm-hmm. a company, and you've been given it. And, you know, so go learn. You know, you're very resourceful, and take courses and just give it a go and give it a try. And then if, you know, in a couple months, mm-hmm. still feel the same way, I'll completely support you. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did.
How big was the company then at that point?
Well, it was very, there were some people in Albuquerque, I guess it was about 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been an adventure ever mm-hmm. since.
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
And how many now?
32.
Okay.
All right. Good.
Cool.
Nice, tight-knit little team.
So can you talk a little bit about why they made the switch to making games for girls? Kind of what was the impetus behind that decision?
So that was prior to when I came on board mm. in 95. Herner Active is the pioneer of games targeted towards mm. females.
Yeah.
The CEO at the time, his wife, I it was the brainchild of her mm. to come up with Herner Active. And they created a game in 95 called McKinsey & Company, which was kind of a 8-CD game. That sold about 30,000 units when nobody believed in the market. And, you know, I didn't know her, but, you know, I think she was, it was a obvious and fabulous idea because, mm-hmm. you know, why not?
Yeah.
And then with Nancy Drew, we took that as an opportunity to not only create games for girls, but also, you know, part of our mission is just about inspiring girls. And, you know, Nancy Drew's the perfect role model. She's mm-hmm. gutsy. She's smart. She takes risks. Mm-hmm. She always wins, you know. So,
Go Nancy.
Well, what's not to like? And yeah.
Take that, Hardy Boys.
Yeah. But, you know, we were the first, and then Barbie actually proved the market after us because they came out with something in 95, and still nobody believed in the market, which is insane. But there is so much opportunity to create content for females and for men, for that matter. And I'm, you know, over the past couple of years with the Wii and, you know, casual games and stuff, I'm thrilled to see that, you know, we're finally starting to get a lot of diversity, because it just was so lopsided before. You know, you'd have your pink games, which is fine. You know, there's room for stereotypes, but when it's so lopsided, it really serves to basically disempower women and girls, you know, from an early age. And the same goes for boys. I mean, Christ, you know, it's as insulting to say all boys love violence. Well, you know, some do, some don't.
Right. Yeah.
Some women love violence, by the way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just...
My mother-in-law loves it.
Yeah.
She finished Halo Reach. She was like, yeah, I didn't like it as much as Halo 3. No, I'm trying. I think Gears of War may be the next thing I send her.
Yeah. Cool. So, could you talk a little bit about kind of the process of coming up with the games and the idea? I mean, obviously you have a wealth of, material to pull from. So how do you pick which stories, you want to do, and how similar are they to the actual books when they go to game form?
Well, for the PC adventure series, and for really all of the Nancy Drews, we're now starting a Nancy Drew iPad series. But we were inspired by the books. But even from the start, we kind of took that as a foundation. But then we, you know, really beefed up the story and the characters. And so we have a lot of creative license to kind of bring that story more to life. And you know... each time the creative team comes together and, you know, we have all the books. I think there are 350 to choose from. And actually, they come out with books every year. So it's, you know, she's going to go on forever. But it's really collaborative. And we try to make sure that the concept is relevant to today's girls, because the creative strategy from the very beginning of the series was to preserve the classic look and feel of Nancy Drew while bringing her into modern times.
Does she have a baby blue roadster?
She did in one of the games.
Okay, good.
Yeah, actually, we
they bring that up every time.
Yeah,
every book.
But you know, and that's it's a delicate balance, because you know, preserving a brand is really is an art form, and you know, a lot of these games just say, "Oh yeah, we're going to get this license and slap it on and make a $1 million," and it takes a lot of thoughtful, you know, and creative brainstorming, and you know, lots of different iterations to make sure you're getting it right. Like on the first game, we went through about six UIs before we got it right.
Right.
And, you know, even in terms of the voice of Nancy, you know, and these games, the series, we, you know, it's very much like a film. And, you know, you have to have the high quality synergy of every single element, from the sound effects to the music to the voiceover. It's like seeing a film. If you, you know, see a film and everything's great and one actor really sucks, you hate it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, so it's, we really made sure in the very beginning that we got the first game good enough, you know, that it worked.
Yeah.
What impresses me so much about the series is that, is both of that, it pulls in such a wide age range of women, you know, people from their, what's the kind of young, what's the low end of the demographic?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, it's, so this is a really interesting, because we sought after girls about 9 to 14 was the core. And we did focus groups in the very beginning to find out what they thought about, you know, Nancy Drew and games in general. And we had them play mostly boy games and give us their input on that. And they had such fresh perspectives, because they'd never really played games before, that they actually helped us improve on existing gameplay rather than perpetuate stereotypes. For example, you know, they had to start all over if you made a fatal error, right? And they'd be like, that's so stupid. Why would you do
that? That
and,
games.
And so that's why we put a second chance button right there.
Yeah.
And another one said, you know, I don't mind shooting you know, I think it's kind of fun, but I prefer a reason before I shoot. And, you know, if they were beating up my little sister, I'd be all over them. So that's why.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. In the beginning of the game, we put a goal, you know, just like Mission Impossible or whatever.
Yeah.
You guys are too young for that. But so that, you know, it's not just you're shooting it up and what the hell am I doing? It's like you have a goal. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm in.
Yeah.
So that was really, really interesting.
But it's, you also get a lot of older players, too. Like, I think I remember, I mean, this was a while back, but we did on a previous site I worked on. Did you write, were you the one who wrote that feature?
No,
maybe that was
Amanda.
Yeah. Just about, like, women who play, you know, like, college girls are, you know, and that they play as groups and, like, as families like that. Mm-hmm. It's a very social experience.
It is. And we, our audience is now 9 to 99. And what happened was, is, in the very beginning, like I said, some girls didn't really know Nancy Drew kind of in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so moms bought the games for their daughters to inspire them, just like they'd been inspired as little girls with the books. Mm-hmm. But then the moms got hooked. Yeah. And then they gave the games to their moms. So it's become a cross-generational phenomenon. And we have grandmothers writing into us. We get the most amazing feedback mail. It's, I mean, it just, every time we get it, we pass it around the team, and it's just so great. You know, that I, a grandmother, I would never have been able to get to know my granddaughter in another state had it, you know, this well. Because, you know, she's like, you know, what's, you know, she'll call me up or email, and, you know, we're just completely connected. And so we're proud that, you know, something that we've done can actually help connect generations, especially, you know, in an age where there's so many devices and, you know, kids texting, and you I think we've lost, or many have lost, their emotional connection with their kids or their, you know, and so and we have a lot of moms, mom bloggers who kind of spread the word. We have this group, the Ambassad Hers.
Wow.
We have one Ambassad Him. And basically, it's just, you know, they're helping us to spread the word. And then we have just a lot of, you know, core fans in our girl group as well.
I actually just finished playing the remaster of Secrets Can Kill. I played it
you
over
did?
The past few days. Yeah. I figured you were coming in. I should probably play at least one of the games.
Well, what did you, what was your just general reaction? You
know, I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was fantastic. What I really liked was that the story, the puzzles. I've been playing lots of puzzle adventure games kind of lately, like the Dream Chronicles and Drawn and all those games. Uh-huh. But what I really liked about the Nancy Drew thing is that it wasn't like, you know, you travel around and then you get to a puzzle and you do the puzzle and then it's done. It was like the whole game itself was a big puzzle to figure out. And I thought that that was really, really great. And kind of leads into my next thing. I noticed that there were lots of sort of educational elements kind of just thrown in there a little bit, kind of squeezed in. And I'm assuming that's on purpose.
Yes, but it's interesting because, you know, education is just like, you know, it's inspiring. I prefer the word inspiring because that, you know, it's Nancy Drew, you know, that's who she represents. And basically, you know, it exalts the imagination. It arouses curiosity. And, you know, there's a lot of problem solving. And our games teach critical thinking skills and inductive and deductive reasoning skills. And that's not something we put on the package because it's like spinach. But the point is when you are having so much fun, you don't even know you're learning. And I just think there's such a place for that. There's always a place for that. But I think even now, I mean, we've gotten emails from girls who are saying, I learned some things in this game that I brought back to school with me that, you know, and I think with our educational system, too, not that this is going to replace it, but I think just in terms of us being open-minded to look at how we can inspire in so many different ways, you know, and this is pure entertainment. it happens to have some really fun things that you're learning. And then at the end, you're like, I didn't know that before.
I completely loved the using the periodic table of elements to kind of figure out the final puzzle. Uh-huh. It was great.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Well, we didn't know whether, and do you know why we did the remaster?
No, actually, I didn't.
Nancy Drew, it's the 80th anniversary of Nancy Drew last year. Mm-hmm. So we thought, you know, for our fans, we do a remaster of the first game. And it actually turned out really well. Mm-hmm. So we've been thinking, you know, whether we should, do that for the second and third as well.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Did you guys just do a graphic uplift or did you do any other adjustments?
We did some new features and a different ending and kind of upgraded the characters too.
Cool.
So it's just, it's funny because the first game, when we look back, we're kind of like, ooh.
Yeah. It's the case with any game that's 12 years old now.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you touched on this a little bit, but I'd like to go kind of more in depth on what you call pink games.
Yeah, sure.
The Style Labs of the world, where it's about putting on makeup and doing hair. Yeah. And
I will say, as a parent of a 2-year-old daughter, that scenario, those and the Disney princesses and all that sort of stuff, it scares me because it's just like it's this monster lurking outside, and I know someday it's going to attack my daughter and will she be able to fend it off or is she going to embrace it wholeheartedly?
Yeah.
I mean, which to an extent, I mean, we all did. I had that element, but I'm just like, I'm terrified. You watch these girls who just get, it's like eaten by princesses.
I had to review the Bratz games a couple years ago, and man, that scared. I'm a real girly girl, and even that scared me. I was like, wow.
But I think it's the balance that is really necessary. I mean, they're going to be in the world, but there also needs to be kind of the other end. Mm-hmm. I started to read this book, Cinderella Ate My Daughter.
I've heard about it. I've heard interviews with the woman who wrote it.
Oh, she's awesome. Peggy Orenstein.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and and, you know, I have 10 nieces and nephews, and I'm just, you know, if anything I can do for them is to just help them realize that, you know, all these magazines and all this stuff that's coming at them, you know, it's only telling one side of the story. You know, you have to, you know, be beautiful. You have to always be concerned with how you look and, you know, so that boys will desire you. And really, it's like, you know, listen to your own voice and what do you really desire? You know, that's the question you should be asking.
Yeah.
Because we need girls to grow up to be equal partners and not to be subservient in any way. We need female leaders.
Right.
You know, and we're getting more and more of them, which is great. But I think we also have the opportunity and responsibility to help to bring them along, you know, to be able to contribute and, you know, make the world a better place. Yeah. But they can only do that once they're self-possessed.
Yeah. Right.
That's one of my big pet peeves with games is that they're only recently have you had the option of being male or female. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard. Like once I'm able to play games like Mass Effect or, you know, Harvest Moon or something like that, where it's usually male dominated, but if it gives you the option, I tend to go with a female character for a different perspective.
I always play as a, if I have the choice, I always play as a female.
But you so rarely have that choice. So it's nice that games like these sort of, they give you that positive female role model where, you know, it's sort of aimed more at me and not like a kind of a lark that's just, you know, thrown my way. Like, well, you can be female, but it doesn't look very female. Like Fable 2, your female doesn't look very female.
Fable 2.
So do you guys, in terms of the pink, you know, in, how do you look at what's out there in terms of diversity of game content for females?
Well, Dana and I work on What They Play, which is a site targeted at parents. So we end up looking at a lot of the kind of...
what is it called?
What They Play. So we see a lot of stuff that IGN doesn't even pay attention to for the most part.
Which makes sense because IGN is a largely male and, you know, mid-20s demographic. So.
Yeah, it still seems a little unbalanced, I think, as far as the pink games go. Like we see more games about cheerleading and things of that nature than we do like a Nancy Drew.
It has died down. There was a big, like, I want 2008, it seemed like it was the year that like all those, you know, every publisher was putting out these very like, you know, yeah, make some jewelry, yeah, do some hair.
There's a lot of Imagine games, yeah, where, yeah, it was, you know, Imagine, yeah, makeup, Imagine fashionista.
Yeah, those games have gotten better though now because it's, yeah, all about careers.
Yeah,
so.
And I was going to say, yeah, and the Imagine series is, I mean, they do have a lot of the kind of frivolous, you know, fashion model, but they also had ones like Detective and Reporter and, mm-hmm, things along those lines. They did have one, and it wasn't the Imagine series, and I can't remember the series. It was an Insidious one. Oh, the Style Lab, where you could make jewelry, and then you could actually badger your parents, yeah, into ordering an actual version of it, which I thought was an insidious little smart thing to do. But there was a really bad onslaught of them in 2008, where there were a lot of just, like, to me, I found pretty offensive. There was the worst one was the Click Dis and Makeup, which was all about trying to be part of the Pretty Committee, which I guess is based on a series of
books.
Yes.
Oh wow.
And so you spend your whole time trying to move up the social ranks, and it just the woman I was working with at the time, who actually has gone back to school to study, she's working on her doctorate, and she's studying games and how games and social behaviors and learning all intersect. So she was the one who played that one, and she just came in the day after she played it, and she was like, oh, this is, she was she was horrified.
She's been horrified at a couple others. I remember getting reviews in from her. I forget which one it was, but there was one that came in. She's like, oh my God.
Because we usually don't. I mean, the whole purpose of what they play is to give parents information about what's in a game. And it's like, okay, so here's the content that's in there. Here's all the information you need. Now you make the choice about whether that's appropriate or not.
Yeah.
And so we don't put any sort of, this is a good game, this is a bad game. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, she's had a couple. She's like, you got to warn people away from this it's not good.
You know, when we started out making games, you know, we were in the minority, obviously. And we'd get a lot of, well, why are you making games for girls? Mm-hmm. You know, like, and then after that, it'd be like, okay, so I guess you're going to go through with this. Well, if you're going to make games for girls, make it pink and they'll all come.
Yeah.
And, you know, we made it unpink and they still came. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, when faced with that kind of, you know, it doesn't even make sense, right?
Yeah.
You know, you just, we just all learn how to be creative, you know, learn, what's that saying? Learn the rules so you know how to break them properly.
Yeah.
Because it's, if not, we, you know, there are some things in place that just don't work. And I think, you know, we're all pushing for more diversity of content for females, and we're getting there. But like you said, it's not as, we should be farther.
Yeah.
We really should.
Yeah.
But I also think it has to do with females in high roles as well, you know, and that's something that is very important and is, you know, happening little by little. Mm-hmm. And that definitely is, you know, broadening the perspectives. And actually, you know, the more females in gaming companies, obviously, the when you have the balance of genders, the better the content in general.
Right.
But there again, you know, lies the other problem of, you know, women and people of different ethnicities and all that kind of stuff need to be welcomed from the top. So it really does take changing the cultures in a lot of these game companies.
Yeah.
Well, and the other problem, too, is then just a matter of recruitment. I mean, because that's something that's kind of pervasive throughout the tech industries, that there just aren't a lot of women, percentage wise, like the number of women going into, you know, the much more tech background, you know, programming and things like that just aren't as.
Yeah, it's just not as common. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
When yeah it, or no?
No, that's true. Mm. But I think, I mean, I think we can help that along as well. And other people I've spoken to at different game companies will tell me, you know, women just don't apply here.
Mm. Right.
And I, you know, I just wonder and ask, well, what's your culture like? And
well, or like the games that you make, like if they see how women are represented in the games that come out, and you're like, well, okay, if this is
that's right. And then, you know, if the only women in there are, you know, secretaries, you know,
right.
What's so interesting about working there?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. All righty. Cool. Well, we got a few listener questions, so I was going to jump into those a little bit. So one person said that he had never heard of Her Interactive before he came across an article that was entitled The Best Multiplayer Single Player Games. And it talked about kind of like the Nancy Drew sleepovers and slumber parties that people have been having. So his question specifically, is that something that you guys keep in mind when you're designing the game, that it could be enjoyed by multiple people, or do you just concentrate on the single player experience?
Well, I think, you know, on the when we did the first game, we were surprised, I guess. So at first we were, you know, kind of singularly focused.
Yeah.
But when we watched them play, we'd see several of them, three of them, huddle around, get really excited. One would have the mouse, one would have a notepad, the other would be yelling. And that, so it, although we didn't design it specifically for that, what it was that we created was exactly a perfect collaborative, you know, type of experience. That said, a lot of girls like to play by themselves too. So it just varies.
Yeah. All right. We got another one here. Are there any plans to bring Nancy Drew to the PlayStation Network, Xbox Live, and then they have an iPad or iPhone, which we know they are bringing.
I'm so glad you asked that question. Xbox and PlayStation, not at the moment, but the platform that makes the most sense for us right now are the tablets, mobile, and we are about to launch our first Nancy Drew game in this space. The series is called Mobile Mysteries, and the name of the first game is Shadow Ranch. And basically, the best way to describe it is that you play the story. We wanted to create a completely different interactive mystery experience that, you know, is very Nancy Drew-like. And so we took the foundation of Nancy Drew, which is books, and then we combined that with game mechanics and interactivity and music and sound effects to really bring the story to life. So this is going to be launched next Wednesday.
Exciting.
Great. Oh, wow. Yeah. Cool.
Very soon.
Yeah. So we got another question here from Dan. Dan says he's about to graduate from film school, has spent the past year learning sound design for visual media, and he's had the opportunity to take some sound design courses in game audio. He wants to know what you're looking for in a demo reel, and how does Her Interactive approach sound design, including the voice talent, music, sound effects? And I'm going to expand upon that. Like, we get lots of people who write in, like, you know, I'm studying such and such. How do I, what do I need to do to kind of get into the industry? So can you just kind of broadly talk about what you're looking for in the different roles when you're hiring people?
Yeah. You mean in terms of characteristics or?
Yeah, characteristics or even specific to, like, art, design, sound.
Well, the first thing that I think is a good way to kind of narrow down the possibilities for what's good for you is to identify those games or the types of games that you are passionate about, and then find the companies that do those games. And, you know, and then from that point, you know, look at who the staff is or whatever, and if you're interested in an artist or being an artist, you know, be bold and contact one of the artists and say, hey, I'm just starting out. I think what you do is cool. Would you be willing to have a cup of coffee with me? And just start there, you know, because there's so many resumes that come in and, you know, and some go to the specific departments, but, you know, right now we're not hiring, you know, but that changes all the time.
Yeah.
I just think to develop relationships with those companies or games that you're passionate about and just start, you know, talking to people, just learning, you know, going up and because everybody started out some, you know, somewhere, somehow. And it's amazing how many mentors are out there. I mean, that's how I've been able to, you know, succeed. Not that there haven't been and still are a lot of challenges, but when you have support and mentors and then you give back, it's just like this thing that happens. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. So I think, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I'm not going to do that, or they probably wouldn't. No, yes, they would. And the fact that you're courageous enough to take that risk and just be open, like, here's where I am, here's where I'd like to go. It's just people will take you under their wing. It's mm-hmm. it's really amazing. And then, of course, you make, in a lot of cases, lifelong relationships. And then that keeps spiraling. And that person introduces you to someone else and say, hey, you know, there's nothing here. But I heard about this job for, you know, sound direction over at this company. You may check it out and talk to this person. Tell them that I sent you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It just that's the way it really works. Because going to HR and, you know, you can do all those tricks to make your, you know, resume stand out. I mean, I used to calligraphy my letters, you know, gosh, no one's going to do that. But, you know, you've got to do it a different way.
Well, and I will actually jump and echo that just as someone who hires too. Like, we had a posting for IGN and there were over, you know, we got over 1,000 emails into the inbox. And so, I mean, it's just a lot. Like, so if there's a personal connection for you. Yeah. It goes a long way.
It's
a long way. Because it's, I mean, it's just hard. It's like, I'm sure there's probably some good candidates in there that just got overlooked just because of sheer numbers. You just can't wade through it all.
Yeah. Well, and also I think there's just always a creative solution that you could find that would could distinguish you. For example, you know, if you're an artist or whatever, you go in, you talk to the artist, and then you kind of see what they're doing or try to learn, and then maybe you mock something up and just like shoot it to him and say, hey, this is kind of what I could do, or what do you think? Get critique, maybe, you know, and maybe it's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, wow, that person took the initiative, because we look for, you know, people who are passionate, number one, who obviously know their craft, but, you know, people can learn. And if they're passionate, then they have the right attitude that's, you know, half full instead of half empty. It's one of the most important traits that separates great teams from okay teams, because it's not about, you know, when everything's going well. It's like, how do we collaborate and solve problems together when, you know, there's a lot of chaos and things that are not spelled out in terms of what the solution is? That's when, if you have that strong team. And I grew up playing sports, so I just, like, early on, I was like, oh, my God. You know, when we were all aligned and everything, it was just magic. When we weren't, it was just hell.
Yeah. All right, cool. Have you ever thought about working on a game geared toward a different audience?
An audience?
Different than
audience than girls than and girls. Women?
Yeah.
You know, not really at this point. It's just our niche, but I'll let you know if I do.
No shooters.
Do you think that the key to catching the attention of the casual gamer is to only require skills that are something the gamer already has? For example, operating mouse or for you know, PC game, swinging a bat for Wii Sports. These are skills that people have before they've started playing games, and thus there isn't such a strong learning curve as a game that has a controller where you have to learn this button does that and this button does that. Do you think that that plays a part, the kind of accessibility of
in defining what a casual type game is,
or getting your audience to like your game?
Yeah, I think that it, you know, these rules, you know, and sometimes, I mean, it's not intuitive, and I think that's the one thing that casual players, both male and female, it's like, they want to get it, you know, and there's an art to that. I mean, some tutorials, but, you know, some tutorials don't work at all. And, you know, it's even better if you don't even need a tutorial and basically they can figure it out. But and especially with women, mm-hmm. you know, they're they've got a lot going on, and if they're mothers and kids and working and stuff, it's like, why would we waste our time, really?
Right.
So, you know, one of the things we're working to do with our PC games is, although we have a very great audience, very loyal audience, the games are challenging. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking to work to make the Nancy Drew series more accessible to welcome a broader audience. Mm-hmm. So we're mm-hmm. going back to see, you know, maybe we could have a novice detective mode instead mm-hmm. of junior, in addition to junior and senior. Yeah. So we can welcome kind of that audience. And, you know, then it opens up possibilities to redesign and port to iPad and things yes. like that. Mm-hmm. And the trick will be that we don't want to alienate our core audience, too. So mm-hmm. from the design to the messaging, you know, each piece has to be handled with care. But it absolutely is, you know, is it makes it the experience more universal. Mm-hmm. If you're able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing that I loved about The Secrets Can Kill. I was actually telling my husband, because he's listened to me talk about a lot of these adventure games, and some of them were like, oh, these puzzles are so easy. I just flew right through it. But this game was challenging, but not to the annoying kind of frustrating part where there's no way you would figure it out unless you looked it up somewhere.
Oh, I've played a couple of those adventure games.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think, from my opinion, I think you've got what I consider the perfect difficulty. Of course, I'm a gamer, so I'm a little more used to harder
you
stuff.
Yes.
But
yes.
But yeah, don't take away the challenge.
No, we won't. Yeah.
Okay. We got one more question here, which was a question that I was going to ask anyhow. What's the future look like for Nancy Drew and for her interactive?
Well, you know, it's in the past couple years, you know, it's kind of, I kind of look at the gaming industry like a Caesar salad in midair. Yeah. It's like everything has been turned upside down, you know, with Facebook and you know, now in the tablets and Wii a couple of years ago, which that's all great. And at the same time, it's forced, and the economy, of course, that's impacted it. And it's forced, or, you know, it's an opportunity, you know, however you look at it, to reevaluate your strategy and then to be nimble enough to move in the right direction that takes advantage of your core expertise and your values and your mission. You know, it's easy to just say, oh, Facebook, okay, drop this. We're going to become a Facebook company, you know. Mm-hmm. But not only is it difficult if you don't, because it's totally new mm-hmm. expertise, you can't lose the essence of really what you've built mm-hmm. or you're starting from scratch again. And so with us, you know, as I said, we're working to make the PC series more accessible over mm-hmm. the next couple of years. And we're also working to extend our platforms with Nancy Drew, making it accessible across iPad. We're doing a different type of series on iPad and iPhone and iPod. But that's the next step. And mm-hmm. then, you know, once that's in place, then we have the opportunities to take Nancy Drew to another platform and or look at creating buying a brand, you mm-hmm. know, creating an IP or buying an IP. And they both have their challenges and their advantages, mm-hmm. but that's the direction we're moving in.
Cool. Awesome. Right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. This was
Definitely.
A fantastic conversation.
Thank you. Yeah. I really appreciate you having me. It was great.
And thanks to you guys out there for listening. As always, if you have questions, comments, or feedback, you can send those to IGNGirlFight@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/IGNGirlFight. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/IGNGirlFight. And you can follow each of us individually on my IGN. Megan, do you have a Twitter or anything that people could follow, or a blog? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Do you mind sharing it?
No.
Okay.
For Her Interactive? Uh-huh. We have a Her Interactive, absolutely. Okay.
We can put it on our Facebook page. We'll put it
Let's do that. Yeah, we'll put it on the site when we post things. So,
that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, so we'll be back with a normal episode next week. And thanks again for listening.